And it's 8:06. Good morning on this Thursday, October 16th. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the local news hour this morning. And my gosh, it's a winter wonderland outside. With more on Wasatch back weather, here's ABC meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. We are waking up to a band of rain and snow moving across the Wasatch back this morning. In fact, we've been seeing some of that snow accumulation in and around the Park City area, and we will likely continue to see that for a few hours during the morning time commute there. But as we get into the midday and early afternoon hours, we'll see things starting to become more scattered and isolated in nature, and we'll just see little patches of showers and maybe snow showers moving through. High temperatures later this afternoon should warm into the mid-40s in the Park City area, and we should warm up into the upper 40s to near 50 degrees in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Friday, guess what? We finally kicked this storm system out of here. So Friday morning, we will start off with clear skies. That's going to mean freezing temperatures once again. I expect temperatures to be into the upper 20s in the Heber Valley and temperatures into the upper 20s to around 30 in Park City. We will warm up, but not by much. Highs only around 50 degrees in Park City as we go throughout your Friday afternoon. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. Moving through your weekend forecast, Saturday will feature lots of sunshine, another freezing start to the day with upper 20s and low 30s in the morning. But we'll see those highs back into the mid-50s in Park City. High temperatures climbing into the low 60s in the Heber Valley. Once we get into your Sunday, that sunshine will stick around across the area. Again, temperatures in the upper 20s to low 30s to start, but we will be a little warmer. High temperatures in the low 60s for us by Sunday afternoon in Park City. Highs will be into the mid to upper 60s in the Heber Valley. And then as we head into next week, another quick moving storm system may bring us a few scattered showers on Monday. Temperatures dipping back into the 40s for highs in Park City on Monday and low 50s for highs in the Heber Valley. And then as we go into next week, we'll stay with those temperatures in the upper 40s to low 50s for highs in Park City, with highs in the 50s to near 60 in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast from the ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And if you're wondering what that all means for your favorite mountain bike trail, on the phone now we have Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation, Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Heber Valley, Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting in on the Heber Valley trails that they've received rain and snow all night. The trails are muddy. And to please keep an eye on the Instagram and Facebook pages for Wasatch Trails Foundation for updates. I'm looking at a report from Basin Rec. They received snow, same inch or two at trail side. The bike park will be closed for at least a day. Please honor those closures. We really do need to be kind to trails in the next few days. Mountain trails, same report. We've got a lot of mud out there. I will say that the Round Valley Express and the soft surface improvements that we did over the past couple of years are really holding up nicely. So if you need to get the dogs out or take a breath of fresh air out on the trails, I would recommend getting out on the wide, what in the wintertime is a Nordic trail, in the summertime and the mud season even, is perfectly walkable for the most part. Remember, if you're leaving tracks, time to turn around, wet ground, turn around. And then, we've got our crew out up in Bonanza Flat. We're setting the track for the Nordic in Bonanza Flat. So if you see folks out there, say hi, wave to the crew, tell them you appreciate their work, and we'll hope to see you out there.
All right. Good advice. Thanks, Laura.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Coming up later on the program this morning, we'll be speaking with Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen about yesterday's council meeting, and Park City School District Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman and Board Member Meredith Reed stopped by to talk about this week's board meeting. Then Mountain Mediation Center Board Member and Attorney Ann Cameron and Executive Director Gretchen Lee have details on their upcoming divorce options workshop. And then coming up after that, it's Cool Science Radio. It's Thursday at 9 a.m. This week, Scott Greenberg and Lynn Ware Peak speak with Becky Schnetzker, the communications manager at Adventure Scientists, about a new partnership to make national parks plastic free. Then Dr. Maggie Thompson, who's been keeping her eyes and telescopes trained on distant planets, exploring the formation and evolution of rocky exoplanets and their atmospheres. That's on Cool Science Radio, 9 a.m. after the local news hour. And we should note, Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. The Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District tracks local wastewater to detect the prevalence of various diseases. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports on recent data.
Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District Executive Director Mike Lors said the September flush index shows a declining prevalence of COVID-19.
The most recent results that we have show that the virus is at a pretty low level in Summit County and in Wasatch County as well. There's one treatment plant that's elevated, and that's the Colville area. But this is much better than what we were seeing a couple weeks ago when we had very high levels of the SARS-CoV-2 genetic material in the wastewater. So things are looking up.
The district is now also monitoring wastewater to detect measles. The Utah Department of Health and Human Services has confirmed 56 cases of the highly contagious respiratory disease, primarily in the southwestern portion of the state. Lors said measles were not detected in their most recent water sample. A positive reading did come back in early September, but Summit County does not have any confirmed cases. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recorded over 1,500 cases in the U.S. this year, the highest annual number in more than three decades. Separately, the flush index shows a 9% increase in Summit County visitors in September compared to 2024. Year to date, Lors said visitor traffic is up 3%. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Midway's North Center Street will close to through traffic for paving work starting today. Residents will still have access to the road during the paving process. The work is part of the North Center Street Trail and Utilities Project, which includes installing a new trail from Main Street to Berkey Lane. Paving work will continue through Sunday. On the phone with us is Summit County Council Member, Council Chair, Tanya Hansen. Good morning.
Good morning, Connor.
And I guess you're now the North Summit Council Member as of last week. How does that feel post-districting?
It doesn't feel any different whatsoever. It's business as usual for me.
All right. So yesterday, the council started after some interviews with a budget discussion. These are going to be weekly from here on out through November and then into a December vote. It wasn't a deep dive, but what's your initial assessment of the revenues presented yesterday?
Well, it was a very good first step, a very good overview. It's, when we look at a proposed $100 million budget, that is big, I think, but it is what, the revenues are and the county budgets according to the revenues. So, they're not putting money aside. It is a flat budget to revenue, so it is what it is. I felt that the budget committee has done a very, very good job. I really appreciate the fact that they look at, what they consider. There is a program in place called Peak Performance, and every department looks at that to see if they are performing to their peak and what the opportunities might be for them to either cut expenses or create more revenue in those departments. And I think that's been a very effective way for the county to budget. So I appreciate them doing that. Other than that, we're looking at doing a deep dive every Wednesday, like you said, until December 10th, and we'll see what flushes out through that process.
Yeah, I noticed one of the initial details that some council members were inquiring about was what's in the budget childcare-wise. My colleague who covered last week's meeting while I was out mentioned, I think there's some question as to whether or not that scholarship program continues on the county side. Can you give us any update as to the childcare program that I think you started last year?
Yes, so there is funding appropriated in this budget for childcare. The Summit County employee program. They are budgeting roughly $30,000 to $40,000 in that program. And then the child care program that we do with the community is about $400,000. And if you recall, in our last meeting, not yesterday, but the week before, we were short funding from the end of October through the end of the year. And we appropriated in this year's budget another $72,000, I think, was the number to get through the year. So this $400,000 reflects a 12-month coverage.
So all of next fiscal year, you're going to be able to continue service as you have been?
That's the intention at this point, yes.
All right. So an individual service district's budget was presented yesterday, or at least the North Summit Fire District's intent to go through truth and taxation. That's the name for the property tax increase process. It's a little less than 5% would increase revenue by $100,000. It's not a lot compared to previous years, but could you talk a little bit about what they said they would cover with this increase?
Well, the situation with the North Summit Fire is, when it changed from volunteer department to the department we have now, there were a lot of challenges, a lot of old equipment. The buildings were not built to standards for fire department people to live in. There's a lot of things there that they played catch up on. And this $100,000 would help them offset a little bit of those problems, but more than anything, it is to offset tariff costs and cost of living and all of those things. You're right, it's $100,000 in the scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. It equates to $2.87 for $100,000 of your property value. And in the North Summit area, that's going to equate to about $20 to $25 increase per household. So it's not a lot. I do get very concerned about raising property taxes. I'm not an advocate of that at all. But they're going through the process, and we'll see how that shakes out for them.
Yeah, you did mention a few concerns about at least public perception yesterday. You live in the area, and have you heard anything from your neighbors about how seeing this tax increase come in their mailbox might feel after voting for, say, the emergency services sales tax last year?
Well, I don't think my neighbors are quite aware of it yet, but I do think when they do become aware of it, they're not going to be happy, and they're going to there's going to be a lot of noise and pushback on this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. It was a very large increase that we went through from going to a volunteer to a paid department, and that was about 4 years ago. I mean, my property taxes went up at that time over $500 a year. So, that's a big nut to swallow, and I think that's still in people's minds. So even though it's a small increase, I do think people are not going to be really thrilled about this idea.
At the same time, I think every budget season it comes up that some state legislator has recommended truth in taxation, the tax increase, every 5 years or so. Should the district start getting into regular, smaller tax increases?
Well, that's certainly a matter of opinion. I think, it depends on the year, and it depends on what other taxing mechanisms are happening at that time. So I can't speak to that. I'm not sure I agree with that. My concern is in some parts of our county, we're taxing people out, especially in the rural areas. If your house is paid for and you're paying out of pocket several thousand dollars a year, that's really hard for people. You know, if it's rolled up into your mortgage, it's a different thing. You may not notice it so much, but my concern is taxing some of our folks out of Summit County so they can't afford to live here. We're already seeing that with our young folks that can't afford to move back because of cost of living. So anyway, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I'm not sure I agree with that.
And of course, the county budget, the staff are not recommending a tax increase, property tax increase this year. I encourage listeners to go look at the staff report from yesterday to see kind of the breakdown of where all the different property taxes that they pay go.
Yes.
But does that mean it's going to be an easy budget year from your perspective?
Oh, I don't think it's ever easy when you're talking about taxpayers' money. But to your point, the largest tax that people pay in our county, and I appreciate you saying go look at your tax notice, is the school districts. That is the number one tax that everyone pays into. They think it goes all to the county. That's not true. When you see that breakdown, there's a lot of other places where your taxes are going.
It's all paid to the treasurer, but of course different distributed to different agencies after that. Also on the North Summit Fire District point, you approved another couple dozen administrative policies yesterday. And, you know, following the council meetings every week, why have you been, you've almost approved hundreds, it feels like, of new administrative policies for the fire district at this point. Is this part of that transition from volunteer to professional? What are all these policies? Because you don't see it from the Park City Fire District side, for example.
It absolutely is moving from volunteer to the fire district that we have now. It's bringing all of those policies up to date and in adherence with state and federal code.
All right. And the county council meeting rounded out with a vote on the future of Spoil to Soil. That's a major composting facility there in Browns Canyon that staff have apparently documented numerous violations, as I think Councilmember Armstrong calling it as bad as it gets yesterday. So, you know, can you just summarize what you've required of the operators and owners now?
Okay, I'll take about a two-hour discussion into 30 seconds. I'll do my best.
Just the
okay. Okay. It was a very long discussion. Action was taken. This is an appeal. So that this went to our Eastern Summit County Planning Commission, and they voted to terminate the conditional use permit. It has come back to the council as an appeal. This operation had 50 violations of unlawful work happening on site, 27 of which were specific to the CUP, and 23 other code violations. So what the motion was yesterday is we have given the owners of this facility 6 months to come into compliance with the CUP violations, or they will face having their CUP revoked.
I was curious about that because the language used was suspending the CUP. Does that mean they cannot operate until they fix their problems and then it gets reinstated without getting fully revoked?
That's correct.
Okay.
They have to come into compliance before they can be operational. Now, they can do work on site to mediate their issues, but they cannot be having trucks come in to dump waste for them to recycle that. It has only got to be for remediation.
There's a 60-day period to remove unauthorized materials from the site. Other violations need to be cured within 6 months. A traffic study is also required. What is the traffic study for?
Well, apparently the road that they're on needs to be widened and upgraded due to the number of heavy trucks and equipment that goes into that site. In order for them or the county to know what those standards for the road should be, they need to know what kind of traffic is on road, hence the traffic study.
All right. And, you know, we're almost out of time here, but is there anything else that you wanted to bring up from yesterday's meeting?
No, but I do want to talk about Recycle Utah, please.
You had an announcement yesterday about, I think, the 4 acres has been identified. Go for it.
Summit County and Park City and Recycle Utah, we've collaborated and worked together to ensure that residents will continue to have recycling services into the future. Summit County and Park City were very strong partners in this process. And Summit County owed Park City Municipal a parcel of property. And I'm not sure of the details of that agreement because that was way before my time. But in working with Park City, they have agreed to relinquish its rights for property in on this 4.18-acre parcel of land, and that's on the Gilmore parcel. And that property, and Recycle Utah has agreed to this, that property will now be going to Recycle Utah for their future recycling site. As you know, they've got to be out of the Park City site. Park City has asked them to leave no later than next September, I believe. That might be up for negotiation. I don't know. But they've been looking for a new home for quite some time. We've been working on this for a very, very long time. And we're happy. And I personally am thrilled to have this partnership with Park City and Recycle Utah for them to have a home in the future.
So talking with the county manager on Tuesday, it sounds like there's no money in next year's budget to build anything on that site. Who's going to pay for a actual brick and mortar?
Well, that will be up to Recycle Utah. The county, that property is pretty close to being moved into. It has been totally graded. There is utilities stubbed into that property. It's ready for a facility to go in there. And that cost out of pocket the county $1.7 million, close to $2 million to have that property upgraded to the point where it is today. So Recycle Utah, they're working on their plan, and all of that is yet to be determined.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, County Councilmember Tanya Hansen.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. MIDA's Wasatch County Infrastructure District will issue another $60 million in bonds for East Village construction. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this report.
The Military Installation Development Authority is overseeing East Village's rapid construction in Wasatch County. On Thursday, MIDA's Mountain Village Public Infrastructure District Board authorized $60 million in additional bonding capacity for the land west of US 40, where Deer Valley Resort is expanding and hundreds of new hotel rooms and residences are under construction. Nicole Cottle, MIDA's Chief Legal and Administrative Officer, says staff carefully watched the economy before deciding to add to its bonds.
The good news about this is because we've seen such a great change in the market in interest rates, and also because of the very prolific construction season that we've seen, we have this opportunity to add just a little bit of benefit to that bond that we approved last year.
She is referring to the Infrastructure District's decision last October to approve a $390 million bond resolution. Attorney Randy Larson says the additional bond money is to refinance existing loans and support additional mountain improvement projects in the resort area. Last winter, Deer Valley debuted about 20 new runs on its expanded terrain. The Grand Hyatt Deer Valley also opened its doors with 100 discounted rooms set aside for military recreation. Heather Cruz, who oversees MIDA's presence in Wasatch County, says the East Village area is continually evolving as winter approaches.
Construction continues like gangbusters, so we'll take the nice weather while we can keep it.
Deer Valley plans to open 80 new ski runs in December. The Public Infrastructure District is a relatively new way to use bonds to fund infrastructure like roads and sewers. The bonds are repaid by levying taxes or special fees within the area to cover the cost. MIDA is a state agency founded to serve veterans and military members. It's involved in major economic development projects around the state. In Wasatch County, that includes the Sky Ridge Luxury Golf and Equestrian Facilities across the highway from East Village. Locals can share feedback on the already approved bonds by registering for a public hearing October 30th at 2 p.m. For a link to register, visit kbcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KBCW News.
The Park City School Board of Education met Tuesday, and here with an update, we have Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman and Board Member Meredith Reed. Thanks so much for being here.
Good morning.
So, Lindsay, you provided an update on the district's long-term strategic goals, one being to have 80% of multilingual learners reach language proficiency by 2028. You know, what's progress looking like on that?
Yeah, so our students continue to perform at a very high level across nearly every measure. 87% of our third graders are reading on grade level. That's well above the state average. Math proficiency is trending upward, and 85% of our juniors scored an 18 or higher on the ACT compared to 63% statewide. But at the same time, we know there's more work to do. Our multilingual learners, students learning English while mastering academic content are not yet achieving at the same level as their peers. This year, we're increasing support for our MLL students by expanding targeted interventions, investing in professional learning for our teachers, and building stronger partnerships with families. Every student deserves to feel confident and capable in the classroom, and language should never be a barrier to access.
How do you measure proficiency in these different subjects? Like, who decides what that means?
Yeah, so the state sets that criteria. So we have RISE scores. That testing begins in grade 3, runs grades 3 through 8. We have WIDA for our multilingual learners. That test is first administered in first grade. And then we have the universal ACT that's administered every March to all of our 11th grade students.
All right. It sounds like there is another goal surrounding the ACT, which you mentioned the district's already met. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we want our students to reach the college and career readiness benchmark that's set by ACT in both English and reading. What that is indicative of is it indicates that a student will have great success in a freshman level college course if they meet that college and career readiness benchmark.
Gotcha. And then on the math side, the goal is 90% of eighth grade students proficient in that by 2028. You know, what are some of the curriculum changes you're implementing to achieve these goals?
Yeah, so the state revises the standards every 5 to 7 years, and we know math is in that process. We expect the new standards to be adopted in January, and then we'll revisit whether or not we need to go through a curriculum adoption to align better to the new and approved standards from USBE.
All right. And we heard from South Summit Schools on Tuesday about enrollment. I think that October 1st number has been released. Enrollment in the district declined slightly this year, but not as much as expected. Why is that?
Because the board chose to open enrollment. And okay. So that helps us maintain our enrollment numbers, fill in our gaps in classrooms, and we can be very targeted with that in terms of which schools are open, which grades are open, and it provides those an opportunity for families living around our community that want to take advantage of the great education that we offer here. So
yeah, enrollment is an interesting statistic from my perspective, you know, looking at just like who's in the community, like trends in the community, I guess. But from your perspective as administrators of the school district, is high or low enrollment a good or a bad thing?
Well, I think we're interested in the same way that you are, Connor, in some ways of like who is part of our community, where do we have new development, what things can we think about who's coming here and who's participating. But we also look at it from a numbers as well, and how are we sustaining our classrooms and what funding do we get with that enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would add, like many resort communities, we've seen smaller incoming kindergarten classes and the impact of housing costs, but we're starting to plan for that. This doesn't happen overnight. We can see it coming, and then we can be thoughtful and plan for future impacts on enrollment. One thing that was unique this year was realignment. Typically, we've seen ninth graders not return to Treasure Mountain. This year, we saw them return because Treasure Mountain was decommissioned as a school, and they returned because now 9 through 12 is happening at Park City High School.
What is realignment? Is that where they go from the middle to the high school?
Yeah, so we had realignment. So our kids used to have four transitions. So they'd go K-5, then they'd go 6-7, then they'd go 8-9, and then they'd go 10-12. We've reduced those transitions to three. So now they're in elementary school K-5, they're at Ecker 6-8, and now they're at the high school 9-12.
Since Treasure Mountain is no more, I understand.
Correct.
So
one more thing to add, that we did not choose to open enrollment for middle school and high school yet because we were wanting things to settle out with the realignment with closing Treasure. So in the future, we can look at that. The board can look at that.
So you've got some discretion on open enrollment. You qualify for it if you're under a certain level of regular enrollment, I guess, and then you can open it up.
You know, you look at seats available, staffing, there's lots of factors that contribute to that decision. We'll have greater dialogue at the November board meeting as to whether or not we will open additional schools. As Meredith said, secondary did not open enrollment because we wanted realignment to settle. Look at traffic flow on Kearns as well as Kilby because we're sending 300 plus more students to two different secondary schools.
All right. And business administrator Randy Upton apparently said that the district will get more funding due to the change in enrollment. Could you explain why that is and where that money might go?
Yeah, it's kindergarten. We saw growth in kindergarten, so we'll receive additional funding there. And once we see that funding, we'll determine where it might go. As with anything, you know, majority of our budget is for employee cost. So we'll be strategic in where that additional funding lands.
All right. And the district reviewed the results from a calendar survey it sent out recently. Can you summarize kind of what people are saying about where the school calendar should go?
Yeah, the community engagement was incredible. We had well over 2,000 responses. We had not surveyed our community since 2019, and we knew that families moved in during the pandemic as well as post-pandemic. The overwhelming message was to stay consistent. Families value the structure we have, which includes early release Fridays for teacher collaboration and a full February break that gives students and staff time to recharge.
I think we just value getting that direct feedback from our community and what's important to them. So,
first survey since 2019. Are there more on the way, or it will be kind of as an ad hoc basis needed with issues?
Yeah, the topics will determine whether or not we need to gather community input. I think the next thing you might see is around elementary. We jokingly say elementary realignment is next, but we're serious in the fact that we really need to take a strong look at DLI and the impact it's having on classroom makeup.
You know, actually, I just thought of a survey that we did since that, not 6 years ago. It was when before we hired the superintendent, the board actually did ask for community input and values and what we're looking for. And we got a good response to that as well. So
great. Well, finally, the district also updated a memorandum of understanding it has with the Park City Education Foundation. Can you summarize the main changes to that MOU and why the update was necessary?
Yeah, there were no significant changes per se. Our partnership with the Park City Education Foundation continues to be one of the district's greatest strengths. I look at them as the X factor. They enhance our students' experience. This year's MOU, it happens every 2 years, but it's especially meaningful right now because both organizations had new leadership come on board. And they've been instrumental in funding innovation throughout our schools, from classrooms grants to EVA to after-school programs to real-world learning. And this renewed agreement keeps that momentum going and ensures every resource continues to make a direct impact on our student experience.
And it just makes sure that we're all in alignment, that we're all on the same page, literally and figuratively, you know, that we all understand what we're here for and how we serve each other. So.
Anything else notable to report going on in the district at this point?
I would just say our teachers, staff, and community are doing incredible work every day. It's inspiring to see how many paths there are for students to grow in academics, arts, athletics, and just special shout out to volleyball and girls soccer. Girls soccer plays today. They're in the second round of playoffs, and they're playing Mountain Crest.
All right, good luck. And Board Member Meredith Reed, Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman of Park City Schools, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Connor.
The Park City Miners and Wasatch Wasps wrapped up their regular season football schedules Wednesday night. The Miners cruised while the Wasps fell short. KPCW's Bill Skinner has this recap.
Behind another stellar defensive performance, the Park City Miners closed out their regular season with a 42-0 win over the Uinta Utes. The Miners struck with big plays in the passing game, scoring on touchdown passes of 27, 74, 37, and 45 yards, while their defense held a second straight opponent without an offensive score. Rushing touchdowns from Eli Warner and Jackson Ritchie rounded out the scoring for the Miners, who finished 6-4 overall and 4-1 in 4A Region 8. The Wasatch Wasps fell to the Springville Red Devils 38-10 in their regular season finale. The Wasps stayed within reach, trailing 14-10 at halftime until the Red Devils pulled away with 24 unanswered second-half points. The Wasps close out the regular season at 4-6 overall and 2-5 in 5A Region 7. The South Summit Wildcats wrap up their regular season on Thursday, October 16th, and the North Summit Braves finish theirs on Friday, October 17th. Playoff schedules and matchups will be announced over the weekend. For KPCW, I'm Bill Skinner.
And the Utah High School Mountain Bike State Championships begin tomorrow, and the Park City High School team is ready to ride. Park City's coach, Pete Stoughton, says the team has performed well at regional competitions across Utah this season. He says the varsity boys team is the best since 2015, when the team won the overall state championship with Haley Batten.
This is perhaps our deepest varsity boys group that we've ever had. As far as their speed, their breaking course records, and their sometimes almost completely sweeping the varsity podiums in region.
At the most recent Region 1 competition in Vernal, the boys varsity team claimed 4 of the top 5 places, with Cohen Flash and Christopher Biglow finishing in 2nd and 3rd. Miners biker Oscar Saddlemeyer crossed the finish in 4th, Kyle Clark in 5th. The girls varsity team also did well at the Vernal race, with Greta Kirby and Izzy Crandall claiming 3rd and 4th positions. The 2025 Utah High School Cycling League State Championships begin Friday in Cedar City. And here with us in the studio now, we have the Executive Director of Mountain Mediation, Gretchen Lee, and board member and attorney Ann Cameron on the phone. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thanks for having us, Connor.
Oh, should turn on your mic.
Thank you, Connor.
Thank you for being here. anyway, you have an upcoming educational program event regarding divorce. Can you talk about just in broad strokes what this is for and who you're hoping to reach with it?
Sure, and thanks for having us on. As Mount Mediation, our mission is to help people prevent conflict and resolve disputes and improve communications. And for many years, we have had a community mediation program with a divorce, with divorce mediation. We thought at this point in time, it would be really helpful for the community, since over 50% of people go through a divorce or separation at some point, to give them options. So they can see their options before they start going through the legal process of, hey, do I want to take it through directly through litigation? Do I want to try to mediate this first? Just to give them somewhat of a roadmap of expectations and the different options they have before they start the process.
Yeah, you know, and also the workshop is online, right?
Yes, it's virtual. Yes,
so
it's on
should
Zoom.
Be pretty accessible for people with different schedules. When is it?
It is Tuesday, October 28th from 6 to 8 o'clock, and it's super easy to sign up. Just go to our website, mountainmediationcenter.org, and you'll see the link to sign up.
How interactive will it be? Will people be able to interact with the people hosting the dialogue?
Yeah, I'm going to give that question to Anne, who's on the line, because she is going to be on the panel. And like you said, she's one of our board members. She's a former divorce attorney and a divorce mediator.
Okay. Good morning, Connor. Good morning, Gretchen. I didn't get to say that yet. So, yes, as far as, Connor, your question about is it an interactive program, it is. It is actually a copywritten program, so there is necessary information that needs to be imparted by the panel members. There are three panel members that practice in the family law arena, and Diana Telfer is going to be moderating. So the way the program generally works is the panel members talk about the different options for divorce, because a lot of people don't even know what that, how to get it started. Do you actually have to do a formal divorce? Do you have to go to court? All those things. So it's educational as far as, you know, do you want to start? Do you have to have attorneys? Do you not have to have attorneys? What is the paperwork that you file with the court? And what are the ways to navigate the issues, whether you go to court through litigation, whether you participate in a mediation before filing or as part of the litigation, or if you use a collaborative or non-litigated divorce process. And at the conclusion of the program, then there is a significant Q&A section. And then if there isn't time, there are resources for the attendees to contact free of charge any of the panel members or members of the collaborative or mediation divorce community.
Yeah, and Anne, I'm curious, my understanding with divorces is it's always a process that eventually has to go through a judge at some point. But how often does it get to sort of like a legal fight, at least in your experience as an attorney?
Well, it depends on how the posture of the people, their emotional readiness to proceed, and the complexity of the issues they're trying to resolve. So in response to your question that it always has to be seen by a judge, that is true. Every divorce is signed by a judge. But if you go through either the collaborative process or you resolve the case via mediation, the parties, people involved, never actually have to go to court. The attorneys can handle everything directly with the court, and so that the people getting divorced never even go near the courthouse. As far as people who have hard-fought litigation, that's, I don't know what the number is for those cases. Some cases do start out with some litigation where people go for temporary orders or issues where they need the judge to decide. But I would say in my practice, I have a private mediation practice as well as I do mediation work for Mountain Mediation, that probably 90% of divorces or child custody situations can be resolved successfully with durable resolutions through mediation. So only 10% actually get really to trial, to a big knockdown, drag out fight.
And I'd imagine the mediation options are what you're hoping to expose people to in the panel discussion. You called it, you said there was some necessary information that you have to get across at the session. Where does the curriculum come from that you're going to be using?
It's a copywritten program called Divorce Options. This is where my naivete comes through. I don't know who actually developed the program. I know that the California collaborative community uses this divorce options program. It's widespread in California. I think it's in Washington as well. So there are a number of states that have it, and it is crafted specifically for each state. So the Utah Association of Collaborative Professionals actually has the license for it, and they've crafted it to include the statutory requirements for Utah. The Utah Association of Collaborative Professionals, all the people on the panel are members of the UACP. But just going back to the question of mediation, in Utah, mediation is actually required by statute before a divorce can be certified for trial. So everybody has the opportunity to and requirement to participate in a good faith mediation prior to the judge setting a case for trial. So it's Utah is ahead of the curve on how to do that.
And Gretchen, I'd imagine that the Mountain Mediation Center offers some of those services. Could you talk about what the options are that you offer?
Yes, exactly. We have a robust divorce mediation program, thanks in large part to last year we were one of the finalists for the Women's Giving Fund from the Park City Community Foundation. And so that enabled us sort of to put something, a solid, rock solid divorce mediation program together. And so right now we have 4 statewide domestic mediators, very well respected on a statewide basis, working with us. And so when we get a case, the case will go to one of those 4 mediators, and being one of them, we want to make sure that our services are accessible to all. So we operate on a sliding scale. And then the very unique thing about us, at the end of the day, like Ann said, there is always a judge involved. A judge is going to have to sign off, and somebody has to actually prepare the papers, the legal court documents. We have a working agreement with Legal Aid of Salt Lake. So if both of our clients are not represented and we do a divorce mediation and they come to resolution, Legal Aid will do the paperwork and get it filed with the court.
Well, thanks for your work. It's obviously a tough process, so good to hear that. And one more time for the listeners, if they are interested in the Divorce Options Workshop, how do they sign up, and the date and time again?
Yeah, so it's Tuesday, October 28th from 6 to 8 o'clock on Zoom. Just go to our website, mountainmediationcenter.org.
All right. We've been speaking with the Director of Mountain Mediation, Gretchen Lee, and Board Member Ann Cameron. Thanks so much for being here today. Recycle Utah has secured a permanent home thanks to a land agreement with Park City and Summit County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the nonprofit will move to a 4-acre site along US 40.
Park City Municipal announced Wednesday it will give Summit County and Recycle Utah the rights to use 4 acres of land off US 40 near Silver Summit. The announcement ends months of uncertainty about the nonprofit's future. Recycle Utah learned in May it must leave its location in Bonanza Park by September 1st, 2026, so the city can redevelop the area. Recycle Utah spokesperson Chelsea Hafer says she's grateful the organization will have a new home.
I think there's a lot more that we'll be able to do on about 10 times the amount of space that we have now. It's been a long time coming, and we are really excited that everyone is on the same page and that we're all moving forward together.
Recycle Utah has long operated from an old bus shed on a 0.4-acre lot on Woodbine Way. Its future location in Summit County will enable the nonprofit to expand its services, Hafer says.
We will be able to accept a lot more commercial waste because we're going to have a lot more space and storage for our bales. We also recently launched food waste at our current facility, but we're hoping that we can do that on a larger scale at the new facility.
She says Recycle Utah staff also envision an education space at the new location near the Home Depot. Hafer says Recycle Utah will commit money and equipment toward a new facility. It will also launch a capital campaign. In addition to committing land to Recycle Utah, Summit County and Park City spokespeople say the two governments will create a new set of goals to divert more waste from the landfill. Park City Municipal, Recycle Utah, and Summit County are financial supporters of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Park City officials continue to fine-tune the plans for the Bonanza Park neighborhood development. KPCW's Christine Weller reports locals can provide feedback next week.
The Park City Council had its final work session with Brinshore Development October 13th. The firm partnering with the city on a new mixed-use district at Bonanza Drive and Kearns Boulevard. The site plan is not yet finalized. However, Brinshore has proposed six buildings along the perimeter of the five-acre property, with a central green open space running through the middle. Buildings would be 35 feet tall in most areas. Park City Economic Development Director Chris Eggleton said the City Council is thinking broader than just the buildings and fixtures on the site.
At the heart of this project is a concept that we're calling a third place, and that's really spaces beyond home and work. It's a place that we can come together to create a social hub and bring the community together.
The central open space is one aspect of the community hub. The council is also working with local organizations like the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County to implement artist spaces. A rough site plan of Bonanza Park also features 112 housing units. Many would be more affordable units, costing 40 to 80% of the area median income. Eggleton said the affordable units would provide low-income housing tax credits to the project.
Those tax credits are like coupons, but it's effectively giving free money back to the project that doesn't come out of either the Park City Municipal budget or the developer's budget.
The council hasn't decided what kind of parking will be at the site. The current plan allows for a one-story parking garage with about 300 stalls, but a two-story garage with about 500 stalls is also possible.
The project doesn't necessarily need all that parking, but the area could use some of that parking. The question that has to be answered is really, what's the strategy that would justify paying for and building that extra parking today?
Brinshore officials said previously they have an optimistic timeline to begin construction in the fall of 2026. Community members can provide feedback on current designs at an open house October 20th in the Park City Library's community room. There's one session from 1 to 2 p.m. and another from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And Summit County warns residents may see or smell smoke driving over the mountains from a prescribed pile burning in Salt Lake County. Burns in Mill Creek Canyon are expected to continue through the weekend. The U.S. Forest Service says the burns are conducted to reduce overgrown vegetation and help protect local communities, infrastructure, and natural resources from wildfires. Fire and county officials ask residents not to report the smoke or flames.